major concern is establishing your name.
Mm-hmm. My name is Benzetti M. Hamilton.
M. Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And for the sake of anybody who might misspell it, spell Vanzetti.
V-A-N-Z-E-T-T-I.
Okay. What does the M stand for?
Morris.
Morris. Mm-hmm. Morris the cat. Mm-hmm. what's the date of your birth?
August 19, 1927.
Now, give me your father's name.
George E. Hamilton.
George E. Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you remember his birthday? He did live here.
Yes, in Ypsilanti, yes.
Probably already got it, but I'm just doing that for double check.
I have it in a particular locale, but that's I don't have design. It with me.
Okay.
But it was September, I believe, of 1894. Yeah, September of 1894. I'm not sure of the date right offhand.
Okay. What about your mother?
Her name or?
Yeah, her name. Her name was, maiden name.
Her name was Sarah Louise Beatty.
Sarah Louise Beatty Hamilton.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me. Sarah Louise Beatty Shuford. She always liked to use that.
Shuford.
S-H-U-F-O-R-D.
Oh.
That was her maiden name. Oh. Shuford was her maiden name.
Mm-hmm. Beatty was evidently...
Beatty was her mother's name.
Right, I can
And see. She always thought about that because there weren't too many Shufords around. Yeah. There are a lot of Beattys.
I never heard of anybody, I guess, named Shuford.
No.
Shuford is a new one.
No, there weren't too many Shufords. Yeah. They were out of North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Around Troutman. And
where's your father?
He was out of in the area of Little Rock,
Arkansas,
in that area.
Mm-hmm. That's where my folks from.
Mm-hmm.
Little Rock. Yeah.
His family is still around there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of mine are still around there. That's my mother's side, maternal side.
Mm-hmm. His father was a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What'd your father do?
Well, he was a laborer, really. But he was one of those fellows who was caught up in the World War I problems, and he was in college, in fact, and had to drop out of college to go to war, and never got back.
When did he move to Ypsilanti?
About 1936.
Well, that was after you were all, well, of course, I
had. We were all born. Mm-hmm.
All of you were already born.
We were all born in Detroit. Mm-hmm.
You may run down on your siblings.
Well,
there's the next one to you.
Well, I better start with the oldest and come back.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Maybe, you're not the oldest.
Maybe better. Okay. I'm the middle one.
Okay.
There's Theophilus, T-H-E-O-P-H-I-L-U-S, middle initial E. He has my dad's middle name, Theophilus Elliot. And then Theresa, T-H-E.
His birthday.
Theo's birthday is in February 6th. I think Theo was born about 1921.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things about I am interviewing Theo, so
we'll get it down. Quite sure offhand, we've got it written down. I don't have it with me though.
Okay, and who followed?
The next one was my sister Theresa, T-H-E-R-E-S-S-A, A, middle initial, E, Hamilton.
One that lives in
Flint. Mm-hmm. And she's next in age to him. She probably wouldn't want me to give her a birthday. If he was born in 21 or 22, then you know about when she was
sort
born.
Of figured out. Some of these they already have down there, but I'm trying to, you know, they have a file down there of everybody who ever lived in Ypsilanti.
Oh, really?
And they give all this information.
Hmm.
But some of it is not complete,
yes.
Especially when they're black.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I'm asking those questions is to complete the files. It becomes very, very handy.
I can imagine.
For example, my running down such families as the first family that lived here, first black family that lived here, came here in 1838. Anyway, I was able to go down there and run him down because on his card I could find out his children's name and I could follow that child and they just trace it right on down. And even when the names change, where they have daughters, you can because they have that trauma. Mm-hmm. But that's all right. I mean, it isn't, we have many, many ways of getting
yes.
it. So mm-hmm. what you don't remember, don't worry about. Okay, who followed
next,
her?
The next child is Dolphin, D-A-L-P-H-O-N, Dolphin A. Hamilton.
What does the A stand
for? Augustus.
Augustus.
He's named, he got the A from my grandfather.
Oh.
My father's father, whose name, middle name was Thomas Augustus. So he was named, he got his middle name.
Uh-huh. And where does he live now?
He lives in Chicago.
Chicago, mm-hmm. okay.
Then I'm the next one. Then after me is Fanuel, P-H-A-N-U-E-L, Fanuel J. Hamilton.
Cleveland.
He lives in Chicago, too.
Oh, it's Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then after him is Aquila, A-Q-U-I-L-L-A, Aquila Hamilton. And then the youngest one is Donald Uziel, U-Z-I-E-L, Hamilton.
Well, Jesus, you want to mention one girl.
One daughter. One girl and six boys. Mm-hmm. She's one girl.
Now they moved here, y'all, your family moved here around 1936.
36.
Now, all of you, all of you grew up here.
All of us grew
even,
up here.
Even the 1921.
Yes. When he came here, he was in, when we came, when they
about,
came here,
he was
around
15 years old.
Well, he was in junior high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. He and my sister.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was in junior high school.
Okay, now you came here in 36, and of course, do you remember anything specific about the area when you came?
Oh, yeah.
As far as being black in Ypsilanti was mm-hmm. concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can only live or buy south of Michigan Avenue. Mm-hmm. And where we bought from a black person. And
wasn't a real estate person.
Oh, no. It was a citizen.
I was just thinking, you didn't have any black real estate people then, did you?
Well, when we bought, I don't recall any.
Yeah, you did have some later on.
Yes. When I recall, when we bought, there weren't any. Mm-hmm. I was quite a youngster. I don't remember any until when I got along in high school. I don't remember any then. Real estate people. Well, there were people who, as I recall, names were talked about when they talked about selling property, who mm-hmm, they should mm-hmm. go see, like mm-hmm. Pete Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as I got older in high school, Herbert Francois.
Yeah.
But Pete Brooks' name pops up there as being a person who seemed to have some influence. Contact or influence with the purchase of property. And so, but we had to, but I'm sure we did, because we were the only place we could buy, and we bought a nice piece of property that was prime land in that day.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no sidewalks, dirt streets, you know, mm-hmm. rough roads. But it was a beautiful rural area, semi-rural area in South Ypsilanti.
I have heard from other sources that the Hamilton children were quite influential in the schools as they went through them. That starting with Theo, who was musically inclined, that he sort of paved the way, because first of all he was smart, and second that he had this ability, and that in some cases he was a first in some of the participations in which he participated. And that the other boys in their way sort of like your boys have been.
Yeah, we sort of, he was very musically, in fact, he and my sister were very musically inclined. My dad really encouraged them to, in fact, they both learned to play the piano, and they played in Sunday school and church, and he was very active in the instrumental and the vocal music departments at Ipsy High. We all sort of fell in line with that, because my dad really encouraged us to participate in.
Of course, with his sort of, I'd say then that he sort of paved the way for you. Maybe that's the question I need to ask him. Since he was already up there, I would say he did, in many cases. Those who come younger, the way's already paved.
Already
for
paved,
them.
And they just could expand on.
Right.
Because it was little. many of the kids at his age, they were dropping out of school in the eighth grade. They were leaving school like flies. And in fact, he just got through high school when the war started.
Oh.
Well, the war had started. He just got through high school and went right in the service. He and then my sister went. And then the third boy, second boy, Dolphin, he went.
You didn't go.
No, it was I. My third brother, the one younger than me, volunteered. But I finished high school just before VJ Day.
Oh,
in 1945. And so they didn't want me. Well, they were taking 18-year-olds. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I was not 18.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I didn't have to go. So I
and
just
you missed, how'd you miss the Korean War?
I don't know. Other than that, they just didn't call me. And I was teaching school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I was. I think I was. Let's see, 40.
Came around 48, 49.
Now, I was teaching school. Yeah. No, I'm sorry, I was just finishing up school.
Yeah.
Finishing up college at Eastern.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just finished. Mm-hmm.
Now, you, let me see, you said there's six boys and one girl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of them went to college someplace, right?
All of them started.
At least started. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They all started at Eastern.
Uh-huh. But all of them didn't finish.
No.
In other words, now you are the lawyer.
Yes.
Theo is the educator, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Musician-educator, educator-musician.
He's given it up pretty much now.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your sister is a counselor.
Well, no, she's an educator. She's really an educator.
Educator. Okay.
Yeah,
that's
in flame. She's a principal.
Oh, she's a principal?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You gotta ask you that because I wasn't sure.
Well, she's a principal. Right?
Okay, now you got these two brothers in Chicago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are they?
Well, the one in Chicago who's below, younger than I am, Faniel. We call him PJ.
Mm-hmm.
He graduated from Eastern,
mm-hmm.
and then he went into the service. That's what it was. He left Eastern and went into the service, and went to Officer's Candidate School and and he was discharged as a captain.
Oh.
But my sister also went into the military.
Yeah, and she was an officer.
Yeah, she was. She's still an officer. She's a what is that next before you go into the general ranks?
Colonel.
Was that what it is?
Yeah,
she's a colonel.
Mm-hmm. I knew she was high because I met her.
Yeah, she's.
I knew she was something.
But she finished Eastern, and she's going. She has her. She's gone on and got her PhD now.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now the next kid, next son. Below her, he didn't go to college.
Oh, yeah.
He went in the service, and he's probably the most mechanically inclined than all of us.
Oh, yeah.
And the last two, one of them started at Eastern, but he became ill. In fact, back in those days, as you probably know, some blacks seemed to contract tuberculosis, and he did, but they hospitalized him for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I say three, it seems that long, but it may not have been that long, but it's amazing how they...
But they were able to...
Oh, yes,
I know by that time there was a cure.
Oh, yes, they cured. In fact, they closed down the... He was up at Howell, my dad. Every Sunday for 3 years, he'd go up there to see him. Took us all, of course, you know, every Sunday. Boy. But that's how loyal he was to his kids.
I remember, we used to call it consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And I had several relatives that died of consumption.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my father had four brothers, and they all died of consumption.
Mm-hmm.
All except my father. My father died of something else. But they all, none of them lived beyond 33.
Mm-hmm.
My father died at 33.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what you're talking
about. That was pretty rampant in this community.
Yeah.
Because as you talk around this community, you'll find that there were several people who were hospitalized at Howell Sanitarium.
It's a disease you can catch.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
From somebody else.
And you wonder how they...
Yeah, and of course now they have so many treatments.
Oh, yes.
They can knock it out. But in those days, you couldn't.
They really can take care of it in a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Van, how'd you get... Well, you...
Well, let me go ahead and establish some basics again. You graduated from Eastern what year?
49.
49. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. did you go right into law school?
Or no. It was at that time, I thought I may have to go into the service mm-hmm. because I just turned 18. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I had just finished, and they were still talking about drafting people
yeah. mm-hmm.
because I had just turned 7, just turned 18 shortly before VJ Day. Mm-hmm. But they did let me finish Eastern. They never drafted me. Mm-hmm. And so when I finished Eastern, I wasn't even old enough to teach. Right. In fact, I wasn't old enough to vote. 21 in those days. Mm-hmm. So I turned 21 in August, graduated in June, turned 21 in August, and I signed my contract to teach in Willow Run before I was 21. But the principal superintendent knew I'd be 21 by the time fall yeah. came around, so uh-huh, uh-huh. I could sign the contract. I always wondered about that. Mm-hmm. And so I went out to teach at Willow Run. I was fortunate, though, because I didn't. That was kind of a rough time. Kaiser was slowing down. Kaiser was the big producer, employer in this area then. They were really going strong.
Because the war was over.
The war was over.
Need more ships.
But Kaiser was building cars.
Started building cars
before the other companies got going again. Yeah. He was really going strong yeah. there back in 48, 49, and 50. And then 52, he started going down. Because the other companies started moving along.
Yeah.
And his car wasn't doing too well. And then at that time, as I remember, we had, that's when the union was coming strong. And John Burton was very active then. In fact, John was the bargain committee chairman out there at Kaiser Fraser. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting.
I'm sure that was interesting.
Yeah,
so. We had some interesting, my wife had some interesting experiences with the union. Mm-hmm. But I'll get down on that.
So that's what I did. I went, I immediately, that summer in fact, I started on my master's. That summer I immediately enrolled at the University of Michigan, worked on my master's, got everything set to go to teach at Willow Run, so I did 6 hours of my master that summer. Mm-hmm. And
how long did you work before you decided to cut out and go to law school?
Well, I taught for 5 years.
Oh.
And I got my master's in 52.
I see.
And I always
you got a master's in education.
In speech communication.
Speech
communication. Mm-hmm. And John Burton was very instrumental in me completing that because at that time, they were just developing some new methods in labor negotiations, one of which was what we in speech education called conference methods. And so I was doing my thesis on that, and John helped me get on at Kaiser, and I'd work midnights on the line, get the experience of the relationship between the foreman and the worker, and then the committee man, then go in the morning, sit in on the conferences where they were negotiating for a new contract. So I wrote my thesis on the conference methods of resolving labor management disputes. John was very instrumental in that.
That's nice.
And so I finished that up in 52. Uh-huh. And then in 54, I had reached a point where I thought that I better get on to law school if I was going to go. We had one child. So I thought I better get to work.
Was law always kind of in the back of your mind?
Oh, yes. I had planned. I didn't have enough funds to go to law school full time. My dad was living, but he couldn't help to put me through law school. And many other guys were going on the GI Bill. Some of the lawyers around here now were going to law school. Mm-hmm. I know now who went right through. Mm-hmm. That is, they had been in the service, like some of them, but no black fellows.
Yeah, yeah.
Only in this area. And so I went to. I in 54 decided I applied and took the exam, and I apparently did okay on the exam, but they weren't letting too many blacks in school at that time. In fact, of an entry class, freshman class at Michigan in that year of 54, 1,500, there were 2 blacks, and they kicked me out before I even got started and left 1 black who's now a legislator in the state legislature in Georgia. His name is Bill Alexander. Who, you know, Bill Alexander?
Oh, man, yeah.
He's a tall, lanky fellow, but mm-hmm. very personable fellow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He and I were the only blacks in that freshman class. And I guess they just figured they were only going to have one, because I talk about it among the blacks because I was the fellow who dropped me out because you had to get. They said I could come in, but I had to get. They felt maybe I wouldn't be able to make it because I'd been away from school for 3 or 4 years, and I always try to rationalize it that way. But I knew what it was, and so they the fellow gave me a D and in a tort class, as we call it, a tort class. In fact, he just retired recently. But I somehow through was the good faith of the Lord, I'm sure, and I'm sure that was it. I always say it was because I don't see how it could be possible. I immediately, I was so disgusted. I went and applied at Wayne State, and I'll be doggone if they didn't take me in. They took me right away, and they were much more liberal than Michigan in taking blacks in because in my freshman class. In the freshman class at Wayne State, there were 5 of us blacks in the day school, as they call it, and there were about 6 blacks in the night school. They had a night and day session. There was a fellow here came all the way from Florida to get in law school. Yeah. Couldn't get in law school anywhere in Florida. He came to Michigan, got in at Wayne State.
I know they were rough in those days.
Mm-hmm. But I just said, okay, I'm going to show you.
Yeah, I know what
you mean. So I said, so somehow it worked out.
Okay, somewhere along the way you met your wife.
Yes, I had met her when I was going to Easter.
Oh.
She was going to Cleary. And so we were dating frequently. And so she, the year I graduated from Eastern, she had a choice of either staying here and working either in the Ipsy Housing Office or the Bull Run Housing Office or an Inkster Housing Office. As you can imagine, in those days, they just didn't hire. The black girls were all, they were good, but they just wouldn't hire them in other places. The federal government was their primary employer. Mm-hmm. And so she said I wasn't ready to get married. So she went back to Battle Creek and worked with the federal agency, in the VA, in fact. And then something opened up for her here at the... no, I'm getting it mixed up now. Let me say this. I'm sorry. She was working in the Will Run Housing Office. Mm-hmm. She was working when I graduated. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to settle down here, and I wasn't really ready to settle down. So that's when she thought, well, I'll go on back to Battle Creek, because she just didn't like the idea of living away from home. So she went back to Battle Creek to work and worked in the VA office, and then we eventually kept in touch with each other, and then we got married in 1952.
And then you had 4 children.
4 children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Run those down.
Well, the oldest one is Mark, mm-hmm. and he has my mother's maiden name. He's.
That's all right. I'll get it from her. But go ahead.
No, Mark was born in. Mark was born in 1954.
1954. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mark was born in 1954. In February of 1954. Just about when I started law school. Well, I was in the middle of my first year of law school, and February of 1954. And he's the old. He has my mother's maiden name as his middle name, Schuford.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. That's what that S is for.
Mm-hmm. And then the next child is Lawrence, who was born in 1957.
Yeah.
And he has my wife's mother's maiden name as his middle name.
Oh, I see.
White. And in just coincidental, Lawrence, we were very fond of Dr. Perry.
Oh, yeah.
So we named him somewhat in honor of Dr. Perry, Lawrence. And then the third child was a daughter. She was born in 1960. And we were very fond of a teacher who I had, and we both knew when we were younger, who was Ray Mullen's mother. Her name was Laura.
Oh, yeah.
Laura. Her name was Laura Joyner. She married Mr. Mullins, and she was quite an influential teacher, very strong will teacher in those days, very good lady, and we were just fond of her, so we named Laura, someone in her honor and memory, my daughter, and then 3 years later came John, 63,
baby.
His name was John because it's John the Last, the Revelator. We named him John, and John has my my dad's middle name as John Elliott.
Now, your wife's
name was what before you all married?
Her name was Fullerton, Arbra J. Fullerton.
And that's A-R-B-R-A.
Yeah.
J.
Mm-hmm.
J. Jane.
Arbra Jean, yes.
Jean.
See, my daughter Laura has her middle name, Jean.
Jean.
Laura Jean.
She's spelled
J-E-A-N.
J-E-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
Fullerton.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she's from Grand Rapids.
Battle Creek.
Mm-hmm. Battle Creek, yeah.
Her folks are from Arkansas and Mississippi. Her mother is from Arkansas, mm-hmm. Mr. Fullerton. Her father's from Mississippi.
Now, okay. Now, of course, I know that Mark went to Morehouse.
Yes.
And Morehouse, he made Phi Beta Kappa.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second son, Lawrence,
mm-hmm.
he went to
Fisk.
Did he make Phi Beta Kappa?
No. He made an honorary for the honorary society there, but I'm not sure what it is offhand.
I think I know what it is
because they also have it at Hampton.
Yeah.
And he,
yeah.
he was
primarily on black schools.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I know about it. It's high caliber.
Well, yes, stuff. Yes.
It's really high caliber because it was established back when, well, after I was out of college, it was established. Not that I would have made it, but it was established after I was out of college. But I remember within that ranks of people who started was some high.
Yeah, it is the honorary
qualified.
It is the honorary society for.
Yeah.
At those schools who don't have a Phi Beta Kappa chapter.
Yeah, yeah.
And Fisk, I often wonder why Fisk never had a Phi Beta Kappa chapter. It's a
long time. Well, of course, no black school had them until about 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No black
school. Oh. Not even Harvard.
Mm.
No, Morehouse is the reason they got it. And I was reminded of that when I heard about your son.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard about Mark. And my wife and I were talking about it. I said, oh, yes, they finally got it.
Mm-hmm.
But no black school. Up to 15 years ago, had a Phi Beta Kappa chapter. No black school.
Mm-hmm.
So we felt honored, of course, at Morehouse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Morehouse in the black educational circles.
Mm-hmm.
You see Morehouse in Lincoln, Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and Howard University. I would say those three were the top. Institution. I was at the other Lincoln, but the Lincoln that I went to was not nearly as high as the Lincoln in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got some other schools down south that were well thought of, but academically they didn't rank with mm-hmm. those schools. You could come out of Howard or come out of Fisk or out of Morehouse, and you could rank, it was just known that you just rank with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come out of these other schools, you could, it didn't mean that you couldn't.
Yeah, duh.
But it meant that, all the people who came out of these other schools could not measure up,
mm-hmm.
where we thought that anybody who came out of Morehouse could measure up. You know, that
really?
Kind of thing.
I kind of thought that was the way about Fisk, too.
Fisk is in that group, mm-hmm. yeah. Fisk
and Howard, of course.
Yeah, Fisk should be in that group. Fisk,
Lincoln,
Howard,
Pennsylvania,
and Morehouse. I'd say those four.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were some other good schools.
I think
Lincoln is a good school. For example, a graduate of Lincoln, Missouri, of my class, was an honor student at Lincoln. And he went on and got his doctorate degree, and he's the president of Central. You know how now.
Hmm.
So, I mean, he is one person who was way up in, I think, would have succeeded anywhere he went. And this is true, I think, of all of them. But Lincoln never did have the reputation of the Lincoln, Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
Morehouse furnished the presidents for Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mordecai Johnson.
Yes, that's right.
Mordecai.
Yeah, Mordecai
Johnson. And Mordecai was... Mordecai, he tried to build Howard, and he did a good job of building Howard. Mordecai is a product of Morehouse.
Mm-hmm. I remember the name. Yeah.
Well, anyway,
mm-hmm.
that's really beside the issue,
is.
But the point is that we were just so happy about Mark and his going through that. And, of course, Mark is now practicing law with Hugh here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And while Lawrence is pursuing graduate work.
He's finished. Lawrence has got his master's in public administration at the University of Alabama.
Huh?
And just got a letter the other day because he he finished the year's course requirement,
mm-hmm.
and they like for them to go out on what they call in a program of internship,
mm-hmm.
for 6 months, even if they get a job.
Yeah.
So he was fortunate to get placed at, not well, he applied, he was fortunate to get hired at Cincinnati,
oh,
where Cy Murray is.
Yeah.
And in fact, the personnel director at Cincinnati came from Ann Arbor, too.
Oh.
His name is Garrett, uh-huh. Mr. Garrett. And he's a Fiskite.
Yeah.
So he was glad to hire him. And so he's down there in personnel. And he wrote a paper as to what he did during his first 6 months there. And that was satisfactory for the university to grant him the master's degree in public administration, which he brought a letter home.
Is he planning to go into that, like, administration?
I think he really wants to work in public administration, city managerial work.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll go to law school. He might. Yeah. He might go on the side.
Yeah.
But because he's still very energetic. And
of course, there's so many people now who go into law who never really practiced.
That's
too,
right.
And I'm aware of that.
I mentioned that to him, that he could use that law degree in anything if he wanted to go, and he could go night school if he wanted to. But
remember this woman who was here when I got here. I can't call her name now, but she left here and went to the University of Maryland. And then she left the University of Maryland and went to Colorado as chancellor.
She a lawyer? Had a law degree?
But while she was here, she got a law degree from the University of Michigan. She had a PhD. She had a PhD in history. And that was my first year here. And at the end of that year, she got her law degree, and then she left. And then she became president, not president, but chancellor of the University of Colorado.
Hmm.
And then President Carter took her to Washington and made her the Commissioner of Higher Education.
Not Patricia Harris.
Oh, no. She's head of a department.
She's the department.
This woman is not, she was not the head of the department. She was not the head of education.
Mm-hmm.
She was second to the commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
But she had responsibility for higher education.
I vaguely remember, but I don't.
I can't call her name at the moment. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but I remember her stressing the importance of that law degree for mm-hmm. her own plans for progress in higher education. Mm-hmm. That's really the point I was trying to make. So you, with that law degree, you can do so many things nowadays. And of course, the other thing I was thinking is how easy it can flow into our speech now. Mm-hmm. University of Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was a good experience. And of course, he had gone to Fisk.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a good experience because when he went there, the first he went there, he was all alone in Michigan. And he stayed in the motel while he found a room, and that was the fall he started there, which was 2 years ago. The Ku Klux Klan was coming in for a national meeting, and that boy said he was shaking in his boots. He called home and wanted to know.
You know what I remember about
the Ku Klux Klan was coming in.
I remember when I was a youngster, and the Ku Klux Klan come around, we shuddered.
Mm-hmm.
But now, black folks aren't scared of the Ku Klux
Klan.
They stand on when they parade, blacks stand on the street and laugh at them.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was a kid,
got out of the way. I know.
You ran and hit. Well, anyway, that's just part
that's
of the change
though.
That's taking place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you saw then, but during this particular period of which we speak, you saw many changes taking place here in this community.
Oh, yes.
Now, mm-hmm. For example, mm-hmm. what black businesses in your time of growing up here do you recall?
Well,
and I'm thinking of any kind of entrepreneur, mostly entrepreneurs.
Of
That's
course,
about all
you know,
we ever go into.
We had our barber shops.
Yeah.
There was a barber shop.
There was one downtown, wasn't there?
Not when
you
I was.
Not, not when you
I
came
don't remember
home.
Any one down there. The only one I remember close to the town was old. Was the how can I think of his name? But he was on South Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of that gentleman's name now. Mm-hmm. You've heard his name mentioned, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But J.D. Hall started there. And I can't think of his name. But anyhow, that was there. And then, of course, on South Washington, the Richardson Funeral Home was there, right next door. Sam Travis, that was his name. The barber.
Travis.
Sam Travis. Mm-hmm. And there weren't really many businesses. There was a store.
Was there a restaurant?
Well, eventually one a restaurant developed
down here
on Harriet Street.
On Harriet Street,
and there was one on Harriet Street between Washington and South Adams, South Washington. Then there was one that's that developed. There was always that bar on the middle of Harriet Street there between South Adams and South Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
Northern Lights, when we were coming up.
That's owned by white folks, isn't it?
Oh, that was owned by Mrs. Mahaley.
Who was that, Mrs. Mahaley?
Oh, yes.
Northern still Lights. Owned by blacks?
But she still, you know, her estate owns it. Yeah. They've been trying to transfer the license. Yeah. They've been trying to sell the property.
The white folks had it or blacks had it?
Blacks had it.
They still, I mean, have it. I knew you had it, but have.
No.
Blacks still have
it. Oh, yes. The title, the license is still in her name.
Oh, okay.
And her estate's trying to sell it. They've been trying to sell
it. Well, I knew she'd been trying to sell it for me.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Then across the street, coming west up Harriet was... There was a little restaurant that before Amos Washington became busy in the city, there was a restaurant there that was run by some people.
That's that where Omitha's place is?
No, right now it's where it's vacant now. It's right in the corner. It was on the corner of Harriet and South Hamilton. Oh, it's all vacant through there now.
Oh, I see. Do you remember a restaurant there where Omitha is?
Oh yes, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. That was a little later. We were all that was in the. The 40s, late 40s. Mm-hmm. Her Cartwright ran that, Reverend Cartwright.
That Cartwright, the old man that's up here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He went, when I got back the other day, I was scanning the people in there. He's admitted to the hospital.
Yeah.
He's just gone in the hospital.
Oh, he's been in and out.
His wife
still lives.
Yeah, okay. She dressed his head.
No, that's his second wife.
Oh.
He and his first wife opened this restaurant.
Oh, I see.
He was a minister.
Yeah. Still is, I think.
Oh, yeah, he still is.
Yeah. He's a Charlie,
but he's pretty senile now, and pretty incapable of really caring for himself, poor fellow. But he seemed to live on.
Yeah.
But he and his wife had this restaurant, and they did, Mrs. Cartwright did a good job of. Back in those days, you see, the war was on, and war was coming down, and that area was surrounded by temporary housing on Harriet Street. And fellows who worked in the construction, they'd come there and eat a good hot meal at least once or twice a day. And it served a good purpose because they couldn't eat downtown.
Yeah. Did you have a USO?
No.
You know,
yes, there was one, but it was out at the airport.
But that was for everybody?
No, just for...
I mean, blacks and whites?
Yes, if they wanted to out there. Uh-huh. But it was really for the military personnel out there.
Well, I knew for the military, but I wondered if there was ever any reason to have a separate one. You know, some cities had separate ones.
No.
Whites and blacks.
But they... because of the housing on the south side, they had what they call a community building, which is where the post is. Mm-hmm. That was the old community building for that housing project in that area, and eventually the post, American Legion Post, when they closed it down, took over it as their facility, because they still couldn't get into the post on North Huron.
Oh yeah, yeah. Still can't.
No. Oh, you can.
I guess you can.
You can, but...
But they don't want you.
No.
I don't know. I suppose about one. It's about as much of one as the other. They don't want us, but really, we don't want them either.
No.
Mm-hmm. At least I don't.
No. If they come into the post down here, I don't go down there.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll ask me, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go down here, somebody's going to ask you, are you sure you're at the right one? I went in there. I said, no, I came to the post. This is the American Legion Post. I knew half the guys who were there.
Yeah.
I didn't stay very long.
Well, I belong to the one in Oregon, but I've never been to me.
No, at one time it was a very influential group.
Yeah.
And Dr. Perry was a member, and some fellows in the churches, but the young veterans came back and said,
like the Masons.
They said, this is too slow. We need to have a party place. So they moved them out.
Yeah.
Those guys would, they'd leave from church and go to the post, and you know, the older fellows say, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be open on Sunday. They say, well, it's a private club, isn't it? So they finally filtered out the older fellows.
Well, and then at the time,
but there
time,
weren't any
course,
businesses. There weren't any. There were a lot of fellows, not or people around town who did little odd jobs.
Yeah.
And I remember Reverend English was one of the first, as I grew up in the 40s and the 50s, and concrete worker.
Oh.
But he couldn't get the kind of business he wanted in. And just like Herb Francois, Herb, as you probably know now, tried to have a newspaper, and he did have it published. He did, and in fact, I wrote for it the summer I got out of college because I
I'm trying to find a copy of his newspaper. Washtenaw Bee. No,
Washtenaw Sun.
Sun.
Mm-hmm.
And I may
probably
find a copy.
I may have some around.
I'm sure I got some around.
Clippings from them.
Clippings, I'll definitely get. Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Simpson and Her little paper was a little, it was a nice little thing that went through the community. I should have some of those around. I'll look and see.
Okay.
Because when my dad used to keep them all in his place, and when he passed, we cleaned out my stepmother cleaned out the place, and many of those things she threw away before we got here. Just kind of left in a not the best mood.
By the way, just for the record, when did your mother die?
My mother died in 1941.
1941.
Yeah, she died of at home.
Then your father remarried.
Mm-hmm.
And who did he remarry?
He married Reverend Garther Roberson's sister, Mrs. Willie Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Willie Roberson Wilson?
Yes.
Willie Roberson.
Mm-hmm.
When you refer to your stepmother.
Yeah, she was a grand lady. She was really she really helped to raise us. Because we were all youngsters.
Yeah.
And,
now, you came back then. You came back here. When, what year? What year did you actually open up for practice?
Well, I finished law school in 57. And I had... I wanted to open a law office, but I just couldn't seem to find, believe it or not, I just couldn't seem to find a place. And in fact, back in those days, can you believe in 1957, I began to be active in the Democratic Party. And because I couldn't do it when I was in law school, I just had to keep my nose in the grindstone because I was a little... I just felt they would kick me out if I flunked or anything. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, so I got back and got active in the Democratic Party. And getting active in the Democratic Party, one of the fellows who in the area, whose name I won't name, said, "Well, look, Van, we got this house over here on Emma Street that no blacks live over there. Why don't we break the ice?" You know, I said, "Well, it's all right with me. It's just an old house." So we bought it for a song. And a couple of fellows who were, one is dead and one now is a judge, were going to file a lawsuit to keep me from buying that house. One is now a judge.
And I'll bet you when you see him, you just greet him with...
Oh, he's got arms open. So anyhow, so we bought it. And really, they didn't care. All they wanted to do was keep it occupied and have some money coming in because it was in an estate which didn't have any money. And so I took it as it was. But we fixed it up. And then I started practicing out of the house. Seeing people in the house. They knew I was a lawyer and I'd lived here most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Well, I don't have to do that. I ought to get a place." And I'll be doggone that things were really starting to move then in 1960. Because I talked with the Worth Theater. I saw these two rooms up above the old Martha Washington Theater and said, "Well, everybody else had small offices." And I had talked around to other people in other communities and they said, "Look, why don't you let your roots down where you are? Just go on to work where, because if you come here, you have to move your family, it'd just be too expensive," and things weren't going too well then anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
But I was building up enough contact with people at home that I thought I really didn't want them coming to the house. We had two youngsters then. So, believe it or not, we got the place. Marsh Office Supply sold me my furniture. All the furniture on a time basis with a loan through the Ipsy Savings Bank. We started to work. And I was just amazed. But things were breaking then.
That was
blacks.
You and these other lawyers.
No.
This other lawyer. Or was that by yourself?
I opened it all alone.
You started by yourself.
Alone.
I see.
All alone.
All right. Okay.
Right across the street from one lawyer who one of my first clients said he came over to see me because the lawyer across the street represented his wife and said, You need to go over and see that nigger lawyer because he ain't going to help you. I said, "We're going to win. You watch. We're going to win." And we did, too. We did. Not when I say win. I mean, the poor fellow came out. What could you do in those days? You know, all he wanted was a fair shake. And we had one judge at that time who ran the show in this county. And he...
Judge Brakey?
Judge Brakey. You just... He was all right. He was right, but he was too right.
Mm-hmm.
But... I told that fellow, and Judge Brakey knew me because I'd grown up here, and he had been close. And these things I learned rapidly when I was coming along. Judge Brakey, he was very close to Reverend Garther Roberson because whenever they had anything, he believed in people going to church.
When you say Garther, you're talking about the old Garther.
The old Garther Roberson. He was, and when I was coming up, that was the only church, other than other than the, that was the largest church, black church, other than the Methodist church and a few little churches of God. Yeah. And so that was the church, and Methodist church and that church were the churches. Yeah. And Judge Brakey kept in touch with those ministers, and they kept in touch with him, because our people were always for Judge Brakey. He'd always ask them, "Well, are you going to church?" "Yes, Your Honor." "Where are you going?" "Second Baptist." "Oh, I'm going to talk to Reverend Roberson, see if you're going to church." "Ah, yes, Your Honor." Reverend Garth Roberson would just smile. He was a grand old fellow. He didn't have much education, but he was a great leader. He could lead people, and that was important.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so I got to meet Judge Brakey from coming to church, you know, and he encouraged me to go into practice of law. So really, when I opened my office, Booker had opened his, and he had a hard time, too.
Booker
Williams had a hard time getting a place in downtown. And Booker was another one who encouraged me, "You can do it. You just go ahead, open it up. You'll make it. Look, I'm..."
Did he come out of the same law school you did?
No, he went to Michigan.
Oh, I see.
But Booker was, he opened up here, so he had a lot of contact with the old Simons family. He married Mr. Simons' daughter, so he had a lot of contact with them, and that helped him to get a base among the powers that be. And so here we were, and I always thought, too, that... The Democrats thought that here was Booker, who was catering to the Republicans, who was a lawyer. We better get a black Democratic lawyer in here. So I was catering to the Democrats, so that gave us both of them.
Yeah.
We really had a good base. We I don't want to put that out. Anyhow, it was interesting.
Yeah.
I want to put that on the tape. But anyhow, so I must say he encouraged me to open up, because he knew me, and Judge Brakey was very helpful.
Well, of course, I'm assuming, there's an assumption in my mind, and that is that about the time that you were going into business for yourself was really a good time, because up to that time, even in my own knowledge, black folks just didn't patronize, weren't very good at patronizing black folks.
Well, we had Dr. Bass had been here, and I must admit now, by that time, Dr. Bass was able to build his building.
Yeah.
And he had a struggle to get that money, and Dr. Perry had opened his. Dr. Perry was in his office, and Dr. Perry's practice was 75% white.
Yeah, yeah.
Blacks just didn't go to the dentist that frequently.
They go to the back door.
That's right.
They go to somebody else's back door. So, I don't remember that much.
Sure, but Dr. Perry, he just couldn't handle them all anyhow.
Yeah.
And but he was a well. There was Dr. Perry. So you see, But Dr. Perry, of course, he practiced out of his own house for a long time, you see, and he eventually, the war helped to open things up. It was the 60s and the 50s and the 60s, and little Dr. Perry and Dr. Bass, as in the late 50s, of course, the early 60s, businesses among blacks began to really expand. Yeah. Reverend Reeves was a contractor. He was building houses, and it helped to be able to have some contact with these banks.
Did Reverend Reeves have a pastor church?
Yes, he had his. He pastored that little church that is now next to Brown Chapel.
Oh, I see.
He was a minister.
Yeah,
and
I knew he was.
Organized his own church with his own family there, starting out there.
I see.
He had enough. We always said he had enough in his family to have his own congregation, and his kids would say, "Yeah, you Hamiltons do too." So we laughed at each other. We always had a good joke about that. He had all girls too.
One of them worked for me up on campus.
Yes, yeah.
The other thing I want to find out from you is now you. Along about that time, of course, there was this doubling of interest in civil rights and that kind of thing in
Ipswich. Yeah.
And one of the things that I know about, and this was partially at least at the instigation of the NAACP, was the Human Rights Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Human
Relations
Commission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at first they just had I've gotten information on it back in my files, but it wasn't human relations. It was more of an advisory committee first.
Mm-hmm.
And then... And we were all active in the NAACP then. Everybody was really active in the NAACP back in those years. And you couldn't join anything else.
Yeah.
They couldn't join. It must have been anything else. So, in their own churches. But they were coming. They were coming.
Yeah.
So, I began, in fact, uh, I was one of the first members. Margaret Eaglin, Reverend S. L. Roberson,
Dr. Baz.
I have to think.
She must have had some white members.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Was Erickson in that group?
Yes, that's right. Erickson from the Eastern Michigan, that's right. Mm-hmm. Erickson and, bless her heart, the lady lived down here in Pearl. Was taught at Lincoln. I will think of her name, but she was... But the whites who were on there, the majority of them were really interested in trying to resolve any differences. There were a couple who were just there as a thorn in your side, so to speak, and we almost came to blows one night about it publicly.
Was Bass the first chairman?
I'm not sure if he was the first chairman, but he was a chairman. He was a chairman. I'm not sure. I'd have to look at my files on that. It's been...
Do you remember any of the...
25, 30 years ago, you know.
Yeah, I know it. Do you remember distinctly any of the... And this is going back, I know this is stretching your memory. Do you remember any specific accomplishments of the group? I know it was persuasive and all of that, but what did they really accomplish?
Well, I don't think the Human Relations Commission accomplished anything formidable in the way of, say, legislation. But they did open the doors for what really was to come, and such as the election of John Burton. I mean, the city just knew it had to do better, because the blacks and whites were going to have to get along. That's all. We were going to be here, and we just weren't going anywhere. So they might better settle down and try to get along. And that's what the commission, I think, that started that attitude. And there were some dedicated people on there. Like Walt Erickson and another gentleman from the psychology department at Eastern. He's in Ann Arbor. Oh, I can't think of his name, but I'll think of it eventually. He's in Ann Arbor now. He's very active with the B'nai B'rith. But I can't think of it. But there were some really dedicated people, and they were almost all alone at first.
But anyway, they sort of helped to gel public opinion.
Yes.
To move them in the direction that they had to go. Now, at that time, of course, we weren't able to go to... We didn't have any hotels.
Well, there was one. Hotel, but was, they didn't particularly care to have blacks come there, but we took care of that eventually.
Okay, when you say we, was that the NAACP?
And along with the Outstanding Business Professional League.
Mm-hmm. I take it that almost as soon as you started practice, you became a member of this
Business Professional League. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, then you had restaurants. You had some problems with restaurants.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even Hobbs.
Right.
Didn't care about you coming in.
No.
But they eventually...
Yes. By that time, blacks just really didn't go to those places. Yeah. They didn't want to go anyhow. Unless they were coming through town, they had some people of visitors in, such as with the EFC for the Huron Motor Inn.
I don't know. I question what you say. They really didn't want to go.
Well,
they couldn't afford to go, or they felt they weren't welcome.
Very probably.
Well, don't you think it was more of that?
More not being welcome.
But there were some of us who couldn't afford it.
That's true. Oh, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we didn't go, even if on occasion we had the money, we sort of shied away from them because we knew we wouldn't be welcome.
That's probably right.
Well, I mean,
that's probably right.
We talk about the same country,
but we younger blacks, decided we were going to go in.
We're going to go in there, right?
So because that's
the issue. Yeah.
The fellows in town used to always go across the street and eat lunch at Huron Motor Inn, Huron Hotel at noon. Mm-hmm. So eventually, I went too. I said, "Well, I've got to eat lunch down here too." But I thought it was just good to commingle with the fellows.
Well, what you eventually did, of course, you got the white folks used to us.
Probably.
We went through the same thing.
I'm sure.
Where we were.
I'm sure.
I remember my wife. Mm-hmm. My wife was working downtown, and there was a restaurant where they said people didn't even know they served black folks, and she'd been eating in there for months and months. And finally, when they discovered that she was eating in there, then they changed it. They put it on the list of those that would serve them.
Mm-hmm.
But I also remember in 1961 when I was president of the Missouri Library Association, I called a meeting of my executive committee, and I had them come to Jefferson City, and we went to a hotel that had just recently opened up. They would take us in the rooms, and they would take us in the major dining room, but they had another dining room, and they wouldn't serve us there. Mm-hmm. I mean, this kind of thing. It was 1961.
Mm-hmm. You see, in those years, John Burton was John Burton and Amos Washington, and I forget the first fellow's name. I don't know why I always forget his name. He just passed recently. But they were on the city council,
yeah.
You know, but one at a time.
Oh, you're talking about the guy in Detroit.
Yeah. That's,
yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I don't think of it.
I know.
I'm sure you've heard his name in your discussions.
I knew about him. I knew about him before he died. But yeah, I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Even Santee Brockman was a member of council. Back then, that's a long time ago. He was all alone there. We don't know how he kept him on.
Santee Brockman.
Brockman. Mm-hmm. He used to live near Beatty on Harriet, on Hawkins Street there.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody ever mentioned his name.
Mm-hmm. He was on there one term.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Santee Brockman.
Mm-hmm. S-A-N-T-E-E.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Let me write that down here. Nobody mentioned that name to me. D.A. Brockman.
Mm-hmm.
City Council.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever remember anything about a man being on the city council who was never informed that he was elected? Who was that? This was even back before the other guy.
Before the other fellow, whose name we can't remember right now?
Right. Somebody told me about that and said this guy was on the city council and they never informed him or something until his term was up. He didn't find out about it until his term was up. He found out that he had been elected a member of the city council. I think that would have been before your time.
Sure.
You would have been young. Because it seemed like to me that was in a lot of 30s. Talking about 38, 39, something like that.
But I know in those days they had aldermen.
Yeah,
called
right.
Alderman. Yeah, in fact, my dad ran for the city council back in those days.
Well, I went back in the city directories looking for that guy's name. Looking for his name, and I couldn't find it. And I began to question it, but I said, one of these days I'm going to get down into City Hall and look at some of those records.
He and Herman Kersey, old Mr. Herman Kersey, was a longtime member of his son. Well, a long time member of Brown Chapel.
Was Herman ever in the business professionally?
No. But he was.
But now Neely was. Ben Neely. Was Ben Neely still active when you came along?
No.
Ben Neely was a charter member.
I don't know if he was.
Now this is what Gene told me.
He could have been. He could have been.
Me that.
But I know. But I came along. He wasn't active anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Well, of course, he's pretty old. By the time you came along, he was a pretty old man.
No, he wasn't. He was.
Had to be, because he's pretty old now.
Well, he can't be more than 70 now.
Is that all?
Maybe 70. So he's probably approaching 75.
I didn't press him out around 90 years old.
I haven't interviewed him yet. He's about, at the oldest, he's probably maybe 75.
Uh-huh.
I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, they said, Jim was telling me that he was one of the
He may have been. He may have been, because, he was a good friend of Mrs. Mahaley's.
Yeah.
He had married her niece.
Mm-hmm.
But
they said the old man was really something.
He was.
In the days.
Well, he was. Well, his brother was Mary Louise's father. Mary Louise Foley's father was really the key. He was the one who was really active. He was tough.
Yeah.
And this Ben was strong too. They both were.
Yeah.
But his dad was, his brother was something.
Yeah.
He was a long time Republican, but he spoke up.
I got a date with Ben Neely.
You should, because he isn't well, you know.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
You know, you should talk to him before
that's what I hear.
I saw him in the hospital a month or two ago.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying how they just forget about the old man. I said, oh, no, we didn't. I told him that you would be trying to reach him. Because I'm sure he's got something interesting to say. If he can just remember, his health is failing.
Let me mention one other thing that I picked up, and I'd like for your comment on it. I picked up that Martha Neely. You know Martha? Martha is old lady Carter's sister. She is Foley's mother.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Martha Neely graduated from Eastern Michigan University in 1960.
Now that I cannot verify.
I know you can't verify. I just wondered if you'd ever heard it.
Never heard it. No.
She graduated. Now this is.